two items, and my apologies to the leadership of the IEC that we'll deal with the issue of the IEC as the second item. And the first item will be the issue that is in the, already in the public domain. And having acceded to the request from the Honorable Lizelle and Honorable Kanyile, I have put and scheduled this matter to be discussed today. That decision was not taken very light. It was also in view of the fact that in our last meeting, when we were discussing the very matter of electoral laws amendments, Honorable Muela and Honorable Lizelle did raise the issue around the Bushiri and what the minister has said initially about the fraudulent document that was said to have been produced either by Home Affairs or whoever. So in view of that fact, I felt it is a matter of public importance, and it is a matter that the entire nation is discussing, so we're going to start with it. I have been requested, honorable members, by Parliament Communications, so that anyone who's going to speak must show his face, because today's meeting is broadcasted live from Parliament TV. So make sure that, Honorable McCluver, make sure that you are dressed properly and you're in a proper place for the purpose of this meeting. So we have those two items, colleagues. Our meeting, it is taking place at a time when we are at lockdown level 1. And we should reiterate what we have always been saying in the committee, that we thank the leadership of the executive, as led by the Honorable the President, Cyril Ramaphosa, for the sterling work and guidance that he has provided from level 5 up until to this level. And indeed, ourselves as the committee, we do not take the work that was put by the executive very light, and we appreciate and we hope that we will finally get to deal with this COVID-19. I must also say this, that I have seen a lot of comments from the public around the today's meeting that we're having. But I should allay the fears and also reiterate the role of the legislature with regard to holding the executive into account. In the media space, they said we have summoned the minister. Usually we don't summon, because the US summon is used in court and so on, but we are required by the law and the constitution to hold oversight over the executive, and also required to hold that oversight without fear, fail or prejudice. So we always invite the minister, not only on this specific matter, but on a range of other issues that relate to performance of the department and all other issues. And I must say this, that whenever the minister is invited, and the deputy minister, they come to the committee without fail. And as the committee, we do appreciate that. We are meeting, colleagues, as you all know, on the matter that relates to one important matter we have dealt with already. And I'm very happy that, to this extent, the President of the Republic has already signed into law what we call Border Management Authority. It is now an act It is an act that, in our view, when we pass it, our expectation is that it will deal with a lot of the issue of movements in our borders. It will do so because it brings about all the 7 departments that are operating at our border post together under one roof, better coordination. But it will further coordinate all the 50 plus legislations that controls our borders. I think it is an important milestone that the 6th Parliament is registered to this extent. And we do applaud to the 6th Parliament for having done so. It is an act, and as the Committee of Parliament will continue to play oversight over the implementation of this act. And I'm sure we'll do that without fail. So the matter before us, I think, is as you all know, and we'll get a presentation from the minister. I'm not sure whether the presentation was circulated to members, but because of the short time that we have given to the minister, we may be favored with the presentation either in this meeting or a written presentation be given to us later. I have received also a lot of inquiries from NGOs in the country. These NGOs were saying to me and raising issues that they have a strong view that Bushiri has left with the plane that brought the president of Malawi. Because we're doing oversight, I don't have authority over that particular. Once we get such information as the Committee of Parliament doing oversight, we will then request the minister to come and authenticate those issues that we get. Because more often, as a Committee of Parliament, we deal with a variety of complaints and a variety of issues presented to us. Those issues we tell them when we call the executive to come to us and authenticate what the public is saying and the outcries from the public. We hold the executive into account on behalf of the public. In the same vein, the media hold us into account on behalf of the public as the Committee of Parliament and the Parliament at large. So that is the relationship that we have with the media, and the relationship we have with the executive is holding into account. It is against that background that we have called, and the people came to the committee and they made those allegations. So we want the executive to explain to the committee and indeed to the nation on what might have happened, whether these allegations that are being brought to us are true or not true, and if they are true, what is the recourse? If they are not true, how do we improve our system to ensure that we win the public trust? Because whatever we do as public representatives is on the basis of what the public expects from us. I have requested AG to, when the presentation is done, that because when I got all these things, I, in my own view, where I was sitting, I said, if we were to get just a footage of what has happened between the time the plane has left and 3 hours before, all the questions that the nation has will be actually properly answered, because we will then know what exactly has happened and will be provided with a portfolio of evidence of exactly what transpired on that specific day. But we thank the minister and the deputy minister for having honored this invitation. We will give the opportunity to the minister to do a presentation on how the issues have unfolded, what has happened, because from where we're sitting as the committee, all we know is that whoever gets into the country or leaves the country must have a stamp of Home Affairs or must have some documents that are administered at Home Affairs. And in this case, we're told also that all the documentations of the family were taken to the police and so on. So we'll get all those things and we'll allow members to reflect on that. There are people here who were invited in the meeting for item number 2. I had requested AD to invite those people who have made public comments to be part of the meeting so that they can listen. So we can improve whatever they've raised as comments and whatever. But for purpose of this meeting, they will not be allowed to speak. They are just here to observe the situation because part of what we will do today and take a decision on is whether it will be sufficient to interact with what they have brought to us as part of public participation, or we may still have to call them to come and make presentation in the form of a public hearing. So today's discussion and item number 2 will then enable the committee to take a sound and indeed an orderly decision on how do we deal with this thing, because item number 2 is most important, as we all know that we're going to the next local government elections and we've got to deal with these issues of local government elections speedily so that we don't interfere with the itinerary of the IEC between now and the next local government elections. So that's how important today's meeting is, honorable members. I am now going to take this opportunity to give the honorable the Minister of Home Affairs to make a presentation on item number 1. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, if you may allow me, please, and my apology, Honorable Mwela here.
Okay, proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and my apology for just coming in without having been acknowledged, but I appreciate that you've given me the opportunity.
Indulgence is granted.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check the implications of discussing this matter, the first item, with our colleagues from the IEC here present here, if it does not have any negative impact. If it doesn't have any negative impact, then I'm comfortable, Chair. We can proceed with the first item with them here present here to this meeting. I just wanted us to check that, Chair. But if it doesn't have any negative bearing and results, it's fine. We can proceed, Chairperson. Thank you. But with your guidance, of course.
Thank you very much, GP. You know, a committee of parliament is for the public. And for today's meeting, as I said earlier, I was advised that these proceedings are being live on parliament channels. So whether they were right inside the meeting or they were watching on TV, they will still be privy to whatever is happening. But in view of the fact that they are administering item 2, they must stay put so that when we're done with item 1, we're able to do item 2 swiftly. We will, however, after this item, grant indulgence to the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the Acting DG, if they so wish to leave the meeting, because the matter does not necessarily directly deal with them. But for purposes of information, they may remain, because these issues at a regulatory level, it is also being dealt with by the Minister of Home Affairs. So I think everything is in order, Honorable Mwela, at this point. We can proceed with them in the meeting, because this is a public meeting. Thank you very much. Over to you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Accepted.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Advocate Bongo. Let me also greet the chairperson of the IEC, Redland Mashinini, because I can see him on the screen, and greet all the members of the Portfolio Committee, the members of the media who might have logged in, and members of the public. As you already said, this discussion today is being aired live, and so South Africans are watching. Let me also greet them. Chairperson, right from the start, I wish to mention why I did not present you with a written presentation, as we normally do, as is normally the practice. Number one is the shortness of the period of notice. I was only told yesterday when I was in lots of meetings. But number two, and most important, the matter of Bushiri, Chairperson, is not solely a matter of Home Affairs, as many people have been saying ever since the saga began. The whole security cluster, the JCPS cluster, justice, crime prevention, and security cluster are involved in it, which means it's the Home Affairs Department, the Department of Justice, South African Police Services, together with their branch, the Hawks, the Minister of State Security, the Minister of Defense, and the Minister of International Development and Cooperation, DERCO. All those clusters and ministers are involved in this matter of Bushiri. So any report that will come to Parliament will come through that cluster. And coincidentally, for the whole morning yesterday, the ministers of the cluster met, and they also met with their technical teams. And they are going to prepare a comprehensive report that involves everybody. That is the one that will come to Parliament and also to this committee. What I'm going to do this morning is just to outline the role of Home Affairs in this whole thing. I would like to start by saying, Chairperson, we got involved in this matter of Bushiri. Sometimes last year, when the Hawks were investigating cases of criminality, fraud, corruption, and money laundering, in the course of that investigation, the Hawks came across identity documents that were problematic to them, that had lots of inconsistencies. They then handed them over to Home Affairs to say, we are investigating these crimes, but the issues of identity and identity document is a purview of Home Affairs Department, and we won't be able to interpret them. Please take over. Home Affairs then went in to find out exactly what's going on about the documentation of the officials. Then they found that let me give you the instrument which we use. Home Affairs has got an electronic movement control system in our port of entry. That means a system which shows the ins and outs of people into the Republic. That means when you enter the Republic and when you exit, it is recorded on the movement control system. Members of Parliament and the Portfolio Committee might remember that when COVID-19 struck, we closed 35 border posts. One of the reasons of closing them is that they don't have movement control system. They are not sophisticated. So we're left with only 18 border posts that can control the movement control system. So when we want to check the ins and outs of a human being or any person in and out of the Republic of South Africa, we go to the movement control system. The movement control system shows that Miss Mary Bushiri entered South Africa through OR International Airport, OR Tambo International Airport, and produced a permanent residence permit, which she claimed was issued to her in 1997. That is just 3 years after democracy. Now, obviously, this is surprising because people don't just get permanent residence permits when they enter the country for the first time. But anyway, she produced it and said, no, it was given to her in 1997. On our movement control system, we do not have any records of her entering the country in 1997. Then, in movement control system shows that further, that Mr. Bushiri himself entered South Africa around about 2009. Other records of immigration are indicating 2009, but the real movement control system indicates 2013. So we'll take 2013 as authentic because it's recorded officially on the movement control system, not on an investigation. In 2014, 2015, 2016, Mr. Shepard Bujiri registered companies with a CIPD and started conducting business. This is important to mention because at this juncture, I should inform the committee and the public that at this juncture, Mr. Bushiri should then have applied for a business visa as is demanded by the law. But he never did so, meaning that the businesses that he was running were not within the law. Then, Chairperson, in 2016, the Bushiris applied for permanent residence permit, meaning the fact that Ms. Bushiri had already produced a permanent residence permit in 2012. For some reason, she was no longer recognizing it, or she forgot. She applied together with Mr. Shepard Bushiri for permanent residence permits in 2016, and they declared under oath that they entered South Africa for the first time in 2015. I've already informed you our movement control system shows otherwise. They were granted this permanent residence permit in 2016, which I must state was issued irregularly because there was misrepresentation of facts. I've already told you about some of the facts, and this matter is being investigated in terms of which Home Affairs officials were responsible and under what conditions. So having discovered all this, we reached the conclusion that the stay of Mr. and Ms. Bushiri inside South Africa is not regular. It is through lots and lots of anomalies. And so we need to take back or revoke their permanent resident status. On the 2nd of August, a notice was issued, 2nd of August this year. Home Affairs issued a notice asking Mr. Bushiri to provide reasons why their permanent residence permit should not be withdrawn. This is a normal procedure, Chairperson. It's the same procedure as when you suspend a person in the public service. You write them a notice and say they must show cause why they should not be suspended. So we actually wrote Bushiri using the same principle to show cause why their permanent residence documents should not be revoked. At this time when we're issuing this notice, you'll be aware that Bushiri had already been arrested for the first time because he was arrested twice. And the court appearance was set for May 2021. So when we issued the notice to them, the Bushiris rushed to court, took Home Affairs to court, and asked the court to stop Home Affairs from asking them questions because they argued that they've got a criminal case to plead in court. And if they start answering questions before they are pleading in court, they might incriminate themselves. So they were asking the court to tell Home Affairs to back off. Unfortunately, the court did suspend our impending action. They did not stop it. They did not throw it out. They suspended it because the ruling was that Home Affairs, please wait with your intended actions until Mr. Bushiri pleads in court in May 2021. Of course, Chairperson and members of the committee, we were very upset by this ruling because we regarded the criminal cases which the Hawks have with Mr. Bushiri as not having to interfere with the processes in Home Affairs. So the very following day after this court ruling, Home Affairs applied for leave to appeal. Chairperson, when you opened this meeting, you mentioned Mr. Mwela raising the issue of Home Affairs and Bushiri. This is the issue he was raising because members of the committee saw it on TV for the first time. I was responding to the media because the media had an impression that Home Affairs lost a case against Mr. Bushiri, and that's what they were asking us. And I had to clarify it with them that no, we did not lose the case. The court has just suspended our action until Mr. Bushiri pleads. And if he pleads, we will go on with our action of revoking his permanent residence document. Unfortunately, the court has put it in abeyance and we can't move. But that's not the same as losing a case. But anyway, we applied immediately for leave to appeal because we did not believe that this was a proper ruling. This leave to appeal was heard on Friday, coincidentally, the day on which all these dramas that are now all over South Africa are taking place, on the day on which the president of Malawi was here. We were in court where the judge was hearing our application for appeal, to appeal that judgment. And of course, the matter was heard and judgment has been reserved. Of course, up to today, we're waiting for that judgment. But during that period, you are aware, Mr. Bushiri got arrested for the second time by the Hawks. And he started applying for bail, the very famous bail application that took 2 weeks. Our role, Chairperson, in this bail hearing of Mr. Bushiri was to provide police with information about the irregular and fraudulent documents that Mr. Bushiri uses. And we emphasize the fact that because all the documents from Home Affairs that Mr. Bushiri has been using are irregular, we regard him as a flight risk who should not be granted bail. Chairperson, I must confess, our worries stem from the fact that of a fact that is well known. It is common cause, Chairperson, that we are suffering porous borders in this country. And the Department of Home Affairs have been working around the clock to deal with these issues. To an extent where the department went to Parliament a decade ago to ask Parliament to pass a Border Management Authority Act to try and deal with our porous borders. It is again common cause that Parliament took more than about 10 years to finalize that bill, which was passed on the last day Parliament rose for COVID-19. Disaster regulations. So we are still engaged with the president there about signing of proclamation, signing of assent, which has already taken place, signing of proclamation and the transfer of functions from some ministries to Home Affairs. We are still busy with that. And during this moment, obviously, our borders remain porous. We cannot hide that. That's why we're very anxious about Bushiri being given bail, because we believe people who are a flight risk can go through any of our porous borders where we would not be able to see them. That was our worry, and we presented this information to police, which they duly presented to court. Unfortunately, they were not successful. As is well known, the court granted 200,000 rand bail each and instructed the Bushiris to report to the nearest police station on Mondays and Fridays between 6 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the evening, or 6:00 and 18:00. At this juncture, Chairperson, Home Affairs had no longer had any any conduct with Bushiri. In other words, at this juncture, we gave over to the police because by virtue of the bail conditions, it is the police that then took responsibility for him. So Bushiri has never been under any supervision of the Home Affairs at any stage. Now, the presidential visit, because people are of course relating this escape with the presidential visit. The president of Malawi paid a long planned visit to the Republic of South Africa on the 13th of November. As I said, this is the very day on which we were in court pleading for appeal that we want the court to allow us to confiscate our documents from Mr. Bushiri. So the president has requested that. As a minister in cabinet, I knew as far back as August this year that the president of Malawi has requested for a visit to the president of South Africa and is waiting for the date. I also know as a fact that this date of the 13th was chosen by the presidency and DELCO. It's not the president of Malawi who decided on what day they could come. The date was provided by the Republic of South Africa. The president then arrived on the 13th at Waterkloof Air Force Base with an entourage of 23 people. Now, after the visit, the entourage obviously went to Waterkloof Air Force Base to board the flight back home. The acting director general of Home Affairs, Mr. Jackie McKay, was requested by Minister of DECO, Dr. Naledi Pandor, to rush to Waterkloof Air Force Base. And the reason being that somebody from Malawi has made a request to Minister of DECO that there was an advanced team from Malawi who wants to depart with the president chair. But they came from the president as an advised team and landed in O.R. Tambo International Airport. Now they wanted to leave through Waterkloof. The minister of DECO declined and said, no, it's not allowed. Waterkloof Air Force Base, as you know, and there have been controversies, is specifically for heads of states and other dignitaries, not ministers. So, unless a minister is an envoy of a president. So they were told that no, it can't happen. Only the president and the first lady and the entourage they came with can live through Waterkloof. So Dr. Naledi Pandor asked acting director general Mr. McKay to make sure that no mistakes happen. He did so. And when he arrived at the airport, he found deputy minister Candice Mashego Dlamini, who was there to represent Minister Pandor, to see the president off as is normal protocol. Deputy Minister was already discussing with the Malawians about this issue of Waterkloof, that the advanced team cannot leave from there. Mr. McKay joined her and told them that there's no way that the advanced team can rest there. I read from the media the president of Malawi was held in Waterkloof base and it's not in terms of protocol, it's very bad, he was treated badly. The president was not there at Waterkloof. Presidents don't just rush to Waterkloof to wait. They wait until everybody is in the flight, then they are called from the presidential guest house or from the hotel where they are to go to Waterkloof, which is what happened. So the arguments about people having to go not being allowed to board at Waterkloof was taking place between acting director general Mr. McKay, deputy minister Mashego Dlamini, and the entourage from Malawi, by which time there were now 66, when we knew only 23 people, when we include the president and the deputy, meaning the entourage that accompanied the president officially, which was recorded in Derku was 21 people. The 23 mentioned is because you count the president and the first lady. But now there were 66, excluding the president and the first lady. Now it was suggested that the extra people must go to O.R. Tambo from where they landed in the first place. It is not Malawians, I repeat, who proposed that they must go to O.R. Tambo. It was a proposal from Minister Mr. McKay. So that's because it took a long time debating and negotiations, toing and froing, phoning the Minister of Deco to intervene and all that and all that. It did take a long time for the presidential delegation to depart. And eventually, yes, the presidential delegation remained. And they were then ushered into the plane. But just before they were ushered, the South African Police Services, as represented by the Hawks, arrived. And by that time, it was already past 18 hours. And Mr. Bushiri and Mary Bushiri did not report to the police station as instructed by the court, as they normally do. And the police raised an alarm. It is then that they thought, because there is a delegation from Malawi, there's a possibility that they might take advantage of it. So they arrived at the airport to make sure that that mistake doesn't happen. And indeed, a meticulous process started, led by Mr. McKay, the acting director general, whereby each of the people who were there was scrutinized with their passport. The photo on the passport, their face, they were matched before they moved into the plane. This, of course, with the exception of the president and the first lady, they were moved into the plane. And after they went into the plane and the president and the first lady boarded, before the plane departed, it was searched by the police. And then the agreement, Chairperson, was the realization by Minister McKay that possibly the Malawian delegation came with single tickets, with the belief that they will live with the president. And that's why perhaps they were arguing like that. So he gave them an offer that the presidential plane will be allowed to land on the tarmac of O.R. Tambo Airport to fetch them. But they must be processed through the normal processes at O.R. Tambo, like any other passenger. But of course, because they were ministers, they were offered the protocol lounge. And so they were processed from the protocol, but the same procedure was followed. Passports were matched with the photos and the faces of the members who were there, and they went into the plane. But before the plane departed, it was definitely searched for the second time. Having convinced themselves that there is no sign of Mr. and Mrs. Bushiri, the plane was allowed to depart. On Saturday, the 14th of November, we then heard that Mr. Bushiri has appeared or reappeared in Malawi. But Chairperson, I must mention that when the team was boarding at Waterkloof, one member who came with the team did not board on the 13th. He didn't. And according to our movement control system, he boarded the very following day and went to Malawi. But when the team that was at O.R. Tambo was boarding, three members did not board, and it's not indicated on our movement control system that they went through any border. We regard them still being South Africa. This to us was not a surprise. It happens all the time. Ever since I was in government, almost all the presidential delegations that come, they don't leave immediately because some people go shopping in Sandton. Others have got relatives here. Some even have got perhaps their holiday homes and all that. All those things are at play. So when people did not leave, we were not surprised. Yesterday, we tried to conduct the embassy. They don't have an ambassador there. It's a charge defense. We conducted charge defense to ask whether they know that three of their members did not live with the president. But I must emphasize, Chairperson, we don't regard this as abnormal. It has always happened that people remain, but in our movement control system, they've not left. So when we heard that Bushiri has left, we wanted to know what mechanism has he used. Because, Chairperson, the Bushiris were instructed by the court to hand in their passports, their travel document. I must emphasize, Mr. Bushiri has five passports. None of them are South African. They were all issued in Malawi. We have got their passport numbers. Mrs. Bushiri has got five passports, all of them issued by Malawi, not issued by us. But then we consulted our movement control system. We requested it to show us the movement of these two people through our ports of entry. And our movement control system indicated that the last time the Bushiris went officially through any port of entry in South Africa was on the 19th of January 2019 when they entered South Africa through the OR Tambo International Airport. After the 19th of January 2019, there's no movement in our movement control system that indicates that any of the Bushiris went through any of our border posts. That includes on these days, on the whole of days of last week. It only reflects January last year. Of course, there are newspaper statements about them having gone into Lesotho by bribing a Home Affairs official. Obviously, when a Home Affairs official is bribed, it's not easy for us to know at the same time. We do catch people who are bribed in Home Affairs, but it does not necessarily mean we catch them all the time. So I took liberty to check with Lesotho. Now, I want to mention, Chairperson, when any plane, any commercial aircraft, let me say, leaves Lesotho, it can only go to OR Tambo International Airport. When anybody is in Lesotho, they want to go to any part of the world, they can only do so by going through a port of entry into South Africa and out again. There's no other mechanism. So the only other mechanism a person may fly from Lesotho, apart from the ones I've mentioned, is through a chartered flight. I checked with my counterpart in Lesotho, and they checked with Lesotho International Airport. There were no chartered flights that landed on Maseru Airport for last week. The first flight that landed and is still there was bringing a team from Burundi, and it landed on Sunday, a day after all this saga happened. So the issue of Lesotho, we dismissed. So that's why, Chairperson, we issued a statement that the Bushiris did not live with the president of Malawi, neither did they go through our port of entry, neither did they produce any of the passports. I must also state the five passports that they've got, because of we have got their numbers, they will be caught on our movement control system if any one of them go out. Now, Chairperson, at this juncture, I wish to stop because the rest of the report of exactly what happened will come from the JCPS cluster, not from me. I should not purport to be speaking on behalf of the other clusters. I cannot do so. I was never mandated. I'm only telling my committee what the Home Affairs knows and what the Home Affairs Department has done. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable the Minister. Members, as you can hear, that can hear for your own, I'm going to take your hands to interact with this report in the following order. Honorable Mwela, number one. Number two, Honorable Ross. Number three, Honorable Tito. Number four, Honorable Kanyile. Number five, Honorable Mulikwa. Number six, Honorable Lizelle Kocha. Number seven, Honorable Lekwase. Number eight, Honorable Makluba. Number 9, Honorable Mudise. Number 10, Honorable Janji. Number 11, Honorable Chabane. I'll take your hands in that order. Over to you, Honorable Mwela.
Chair, once more, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the Committee, Advocate Bongo. Greetings to Honorable Members present here, our colleagues, my colleagues in the committee, and Dr. Aaron Swaledi, the Minister, and the DM. Well, let's acknowledge the briefing, Honorable Minister. We really appreciate the briefing that you've just presented to members of this Portfolio Committee, Home Affairs. Well, it's very confusing, Honorable Chair, and very surprising. Why am I saying this is that we, as a country, South Africa, we are faced with a number of challenges. Now, Mr. Bushiri is adding in those challenges that we are having, problems, adding more problems to us as a country. However, you ask yourself many questions, Honorable Members, as to say, as a country, are we safe enough? Are we safe to an extent that we find ourselves in a situation whereby somebody can just go outside South Africa without having noticed, being noticed, that person has left the country, has escaped the country and all that. Our law enforcement agency, I think we have a problem, Dr. Mswaledi, our minister. We have a very serious problem with our law enforcement agency. It can be correct. It can be correct that in a country like South Africa, Mr. Bushiri will do whatever that he wants. He escape without being noticed and all that. It's a very serious problem, which I think as a country we need to revisit some of our laws. Because, you see, as you are briefing us, Honorable Minister, we have raised a number of issues. 23 people in the plane, no search and all that. Other people are still left in South Africa doing what? Do they have permits to roam around South Africa? They are doing what? What is it exactly that they are doing? Now there were 66 people who were supposed to be to fly with the president and all that. It's very, very much confusing. In fact, I've got many questions to ask, but I can see that Honorable Minister Mswaledi might not be in a good position to answer some of the questions because he indicated that some of the things does not belong to Home Affairs. But what is important, Honorable Minister and Honorable Members, is that South Africans want answers. And we can't delay that process. They want answers as in like yesterday. They want to know what happened. How did Bushiri leave the country? How did Bushiri escape the country while we have serious security issues? When it comes to arresting our own people in South Africa, it becomes easy. If they want to arrest one of us in South Africa, it becomes easy. Warrant of arrest can be issued now. After 5 minutes being issued, that person will be arrested. Now you can't, somebody who has defrauded South Africa, who has caused South Africa a lot of crisis, we are facing. It's a problem. This is also part of oversight, Honorable Minister. It seems as if somebody somewhere has failed to do his or her own oversight. Because when we say, when the court was granting Bushiri and a bail, part of the options or part of what was required of Bushiri to do was to appear and report in his nearest police station between Monday and Friday. Now, part of the oversight, they've noticed that Bushiri did not do what did not report to the nearest police station, and it was late by then. Because, let me tell you, some of the reports are saying Bushiri left the country on Wednesday before Friday, after the president of Malawi left South Africa here. Now, where is the footage? Because we need to have a footage. I was speaking about oversight, Honorable Chairperson. Somebody must be charged. I think some other people are being charged of failing to do oversight. And even in this case, somebody somewhere must be charged of failing not to do oversight. Because it seems as if South Africa, people will just come from outside countries, do what they want, and so on, and then after that leave South Africa. We want Bushiri back here. South Africans want Bushiri to come back and explain himself. And that base, it must be invoked with immediate effect. I'm told warrant of arrest has been issued again. What we need to know and what we need to see happening is that Bushiri must be brought back in South Africa and face his own issues here. Minister, security cluster. You are part of security cluster. Where some of the, you are sitting with ministers there in that security cluster. Minister of Defense, Minister of Intelligence, Minister of Home Affairs, Minister of Police. You are saying you can't speak on behalf of them, but you are part of that cluster. I still fail to understand what is it that you can't tell us. What is it you have met as security cluster, the JPS cluster and so on? You have met. What are the recommendations? What was the briefing of that particular meeting? We must know. We deserve to know. We deserve to know the truth. Besides being a member of this portfolio committee, I'm speaking of, on behalf of all South Africans. All South Africans who deserve to know the truth. Ukuthi, where, how did Bushiri leave South Africa? If we are saying he didn't leave with his president, let's get the footages. There are footages all over South Africa. If you want to arrest people, not you, Minister, as a person, but if you want to arrest people, you even go and put footages wherever you want to put footages so that you can know and see what is it that people are doing outside there. Let's go and revisit those footages, but we want a report. It means that South Africans, because by this time, it's about 4 to 5 days now, and there is no press conference, there is nothing that we have done, there is nothing that we have done as a country and as government, and it is our responsibility as members of parliament to hold the executive accountable. I want to suggest that, Honourable Minister, with immediate effect, please go back to that JPC cluster and the security cluster and make sure that you tell us as South Africans what happened. We know Bushiri is in Malawi. When are you bringing Bushiri back to South Africa? When are you going to brief the nation about the issue of Bushiri? So please, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, part of the investigation, I know there is an investigation, as you have said. How far are you and how far is the security cluster? How far is the security cluster regarding the investigation? There is nothing called, in this case, there is nothing called sensitive. There are issues that are still embargoed. South Africans deserve the truth. Let's give South Africans the truth to what Bushiri uphume kanjani, wa Bushiri wahamba in South Africa. Because he has gone from South Africa to Malawi, uhambe kanjani. Ufohlile a fence or whatever, we must know. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy President. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the situation, my colleagues again will cover some more of the specifics a bit later on. But certainly I'm very concerned about the fact that this shows that South Africa is indeed a state of insiders and outsiders, where insiders are allowed to do whatever they feel like and just walk away, and where outsiders are stuck in queues for years and years waiting for these self-same documents. Now, I hear the minister say that the problem with the borders is related to the fact that we waited almost 10 years to pass the BMA. And my concern is if we have to wait for the BMA for things to get sorted out, that could take 30 years. And I think it's a real concern. There was a mechanism in place before the BMA that was supposed to control the functional, and these issues are supposedly being solved by the BMA. But in this case, we have somebody that's just disappeared out of the country without anybody knowing how that happened. And it's deeply concerned, but it shows that there's two key issues here. The one is, how do people get in and out of the country without anybody knowing about it? And certainly we have a big problem if there's this gap where there was no way to control this before and now the BMA is going to sort it out. Then we need to understand, where's the funding going to come from? Because there's very limited funding for the BMA. And so if we're waiting for that, we need to urgently look into more detail about how the funding is going to be provisioned for the Border Management Authority, and how we are going to be able to plug these gaps as soon as possible. Now, the other issue is things like, how was a person that was in the country on a visitor's visa allowed to register a business? And these are things that we need to sort out. There should be a link between CIPRO and Home Affairs on the system side, whereby if somebody comes on a visitor's visa, it's simply stopped. You shouldn't be able to register a business. You shouldn't be able to change the directive to somebody that's here on a visitor's visa. And I want to understand why that hasn't happened yet and what is going to be done to address that situation. My next question, Chair, is about the fact that it is reported that the Bushiri's children left the country a few days before they fled South Africa. And surely this was surely this must have been red flagged. And I want to understand how the department, if they were searching airplanes in that, how did they not pick up that the Bushiri's children had left South Africa by themselves 2 days before this had happened? Why is there not a mechanism by which these kind of situations are flagged? And finally, what are the mitigating factors that the department are putting in place to ensure that all people in South Africa that are out under bail do not escape? Because we have the opposite situation with failed asylum seekers, whereby they're released to leave the country. And they just stay there. There's no mechanism whatsoever to track whether persons that are ordered to leave the country indeed do so. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, thank you. Number three.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, greetings to everyone and also to my colleagues. Chairperson, my question is this. Is the department planning to investigate the legal status of foreign led citizens in South Africa? And also the other question is this. Has the Department of Home Affairs or other state institutions conducted their counterparts in Malawi regarding this issue of how did it the Bushiris entered the Malawi Republic? Thank you.
Number four, Honorable Kanyira.
Good morning, Jason, the Minister, the Deputy, and my colleagues. Thank you for the opportunity. Honourable Minister, we welcome the presentation that you
Honourable Kanyile, you are not audible.
Can you hear me now?
That is correct. Proceed.
Okay, thank you. Greetings to everyone together with Chairperson, in your open meeting, you indicated that you asked to provide a footage that will show us at least before the plane left the Waterkloof or it left our Tambo. I was under the impression that before the minister does this presentation, we are going to look at that. It's certain that it was not any of those flowers. The question that I also have, the presentation by the minister. The minister has indicated that members have arrived at Waterkloof just after 6, after they have realized that Mr. Bukiri did not come to report at the nearest police station. Then they have searched that plane in the presence of Mr. McKay. What I would like to know, because we've made to understand that the plane left Waterkloof and it waited over time to fetch the other people as well. And they have fetched that plane as well. We would like to know what fetched that plane. The minister has also indicated that there are three people that came with the president, that my language with the president. I understand that other countries, they have said them that when you visit that country, you provide with an address of where you're staying, how long that they can monitor if you are actually going to exit that country at that specific time. Does the minister know where these people are? Or these people that are staying around will be hearing what they were throwing stones at our police officer? We want to know if the minister know where these people are. And another question that I have to the minister, I want to know if the minister know how Bushiri left. I understand that he did not see them through the electronic movement monitors and whatnot. He is not about what he did not find. But what we would know as a portfolio committee and South Africans is if the minister knows how he left the country. Because this issue, it's an issue that raised as an opposition, that our borders, they need to be protected. We can't have people that are entering, leaving our country as and when, and without using proper channels. All the issues that the Home Affairs presented, they are not new issues. Very, very old issues. I remember even the members of the they were indicating that these issues, they are very new. We can't expect the minister to resolve them because the ministers that for him, they could not resolve them. If that's the case, then the minister is not supposed to be there. The minister needs to ensure our borders are protected, needs to ensure safety of South Africans, to ensure that at all times, we know who comes into the country and who leaves our country. I'd also like to refresh your memory, Minister. On the 10th of November 2018, you were attending a nurses in Johannesburg that I think was hosted by Kanye. You have said, at that time you were still a minister, I quote, more hospitals and clinics were needed to accommodate all local and foreign patients, adding that South Africa had to relook at its immigration policies to control the number of and illegal immigrants in the country, close quote. This is a clear indication that you have attacked, Honorable. It shows that when you joined the Department of Home Affairs in May 2019, already you knew that we had an of immigration policy. What, like, although I understand that you have for the game, we finalized that what done from May 2019 to date to ensure that our borders are protected, what measures are in place? If we have not done anything, the plans while we are still dealing with the BMA, because South Africans do not feel safe and they feel like this is a banana republic. You must instill confidence. You must ensure that South Africans, they feel safe. Honorable Minister, another issue that we are having is an issue of human trafficking. if a well-known couple like the Bushiris can leave the country without anyone saying that the country, can you today give confidence to the mother that their children that have been abducted, that you know that the children for sure have not left the country? I remember when I delivered my response to the president in February, I mentioned that there is a young girl that is 9 years old, Amashabete from Springs. Amashabete has been missing minister since April 2019 up until today. Can you tell Amashabete's parents that you know for sure that Amashabete is still within the borders of this country? I want to put to you again that these issues are not new issues. Remember last year we had a meeting with the former mayor of the city of Johannesburg. We were joined by the city of Kokta, where he was indicating that in the...
Honorable Kanyile, we've lost you again.
Sir. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, can you can.
Can I video chat person?
Yeah, please.
Am I audible now?
You're audible. I do not want you to switch off the video because some viewers enjoy seeing you in your face. But because of the audibility, please, proceed. Proceed.
Okay, am I audible?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Minister, we had a meeting in our portfolio committee, where the former of the city of Johannesburg was flagging the issue of illegal immigrants that are in the city of Johannesburg. Also indicated that some of them are employed by Keta and they are not documented. And he was pressing your intervention. Was very frustrated because from he tried to communicate with Minister Gaba, he tried to write with Swele, and also wrote to you. In that very same meeting, you said you did not refuse to with him. I think at some point you spoke at the club. But you must also remember that this issue, it was his issue that he said not leave just like that. No, that meeting with the former mayor of. What have you done to address the issues that he raised in that portfolio committee meeting? And there were documents also sent to. Another issue that we are having, Minister, you have also flagged it here. The issue of discrepancy that were in the application of the Bushiris when they are applying for their permanent residency. What I would like to know is that your department grants a permanent residency if the discrepancy in their application. Secondly, why were these discrepancies not picked up at the time of application? And thirdly, why were they at the time of processing that application? We come now and be jumping up and down their application when we have not done anything during that time. And last year in August, when we were in over at home, the officials that we saw there, they gave a shot that the department, it is very easy for them to pick up the official processing a certain application at a point in time because they are using biometrics. If that is the truth, then it means now you know who processes permanent residency. You know that official because he logged on the system using their biometrics. What I'd like to know is what action have you taken against that? I think I will put it for now.
Okay. Yeah, we keep on losing you, but you can write to the chat some of these questions because some might have been missed by the Honorable Minister.
Her network is pushing.
Honorable Chairperson.
Yes.
May I request that when the minister responds, I will note the questions that he did answer and raise them again. I want to raise these questions in this very same meeting, because what I have picked up with the Department of is that when we send them questions in writing, they do not respond. So I would like to have all the questions today. The South Africans, they want all the answers, or they want the answers today. So I will listen to one and if they're not respond, can I be given an opportunity to raise it today?
Yes, but in the same vein, get to a space where we can hear you properly. In the meantime, I agree with what you say. But get to a space where we can hear you, because you keep on cutting. The next speaker is Honorable Mundikwa. He will be followed by Honorable Lizelle. After that, Ms. Green.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by thanking the Honorable Minister for the briefing by Bushiri issue. Chairperson, I think this issue is very suspicious, as honorable members have already indicated. I think very suspicious due to the fact that Mr. Bushiri cannot just leave the country without any trace. This poses a very serious security risk in the country. The other issue, Chairperson, that I want to raise is a question, is the issue of the people who did not vote from the flight. Though the minister says it's normal, but maybe somebody could have taken advantage of that. And that's why Bushiri has left the country, because maybe somebody helped him, according to the people who did not left the, or who did not vote from the flight. The way Bushiri left the country, Chairperson, raised many questions. I think this matter needs to be investigated very thoroughly, and all department concerned should be involved in making sure that the issue of the Bushiri be brought to book. Chairperson, I also want to say the minister also reported that on that day Bushiri did not report to the police station. It clearly shows that somebody is not doing his job. And this also raised a serious suspicion on why Bushiri did not report on the police station, and that matter was just left without anything being done. And I think at the airport, the CCTV footage, why can't the all the department or the security make sure that they look into the footage and identify who helped Bushiri to escape the country. So, Chairperson, I think this matter is very serious. And I think the department, all the department involved, should make sure that this matter is seriously investigated to avoid this matter that can happen in the future again, Chairperson. Bushiri cannot leave the country without any trace. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mundeko. Honorable Lekocha.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think we really need to, as a committee today, call a spade a spade. I think what happened at the weekend with the Bushiris fleeing in the manner that they did and announcing it from Malawi, when nobody of us knew that they had fled, none of the authorities knew they had fled, I think in my view can only be described as a national embarrassment. I think it's quite the joke is on us, and I think we've been made fools of. I think Mr. Bushiri's great escape, Chairperson, and the narrative that the minister outlined today for me is a very palpable example of just how broken our immigration system is. It is broken and it is rotten to the core. And this rate at which our borders are being compromised time and time again is a very serious safety and security risk for our nation. Our nation is becoming a playground for criminal syndicates and possibly even terrorist groups. And I think the Bushiri case is a clear indication that Home Affairs is unable to enforce its own immigration laws. And I think today what we need to hear from the minister is two things. We need to hear from him who will be held responsible. It is clear the pursuit is led through a border. Borders are managed by Home Affairs officials. So we need to know who will be held responsible. And I think we need an urgent plan today, Chairperson. A very clear plan as to how we are going to rescue our immigration system. And why am I saying that our immigration system is collapsed? We know we don't have borders. We went and saw with our own eyes at the Beitbridge border. The gates are open. There's a border, but the gates are left open. We know that the border management authority is going to take years to be set up. We know that our passports and IDs are sold for 2,000 rand or for 3,000 rand. We know that economic migrants are coming into our country, abusing the asylum seeker system. We know that we don't have enough immigration inspectors. We've only got 600. So we don't have the capacity to enforce our own immigration laws. When we recently went to the oversight visit to these refugee camps at Maitland and Balville, Chairperson, and we were told there that when they do identify undocumented migrants, as an example, these undocumented migrants are told to go and report at Home Affairs offices, which most probably they will not do, which means they disappear into the system again. We know, for example, as well that those who come into our country to claim asylum or refugee status are able to live and work on those temporary documents without their status ever being confirmed or denied. So the system in its entirety has collapsed. So, Chairperson, we know all these facts, but what we don't know from the minister is what he never tells us. What are his plans to fix our broken immigration system? And so I would also like to ask a couple of questions. Many of them might have been covered by my colleagues already, but I would like to know, why did the Beshiris not hand in the 5 passports which the minister alluded to? Why did they not hand in these passports? Is the minister aware of reports today that the Beshiris might already be on their way to Ghana? I would like to know, what does the minister make of allegations that maybe senior ANC officials were involved in this great escape? We did see the insults that were hurled at him by ANC MP Boy Mamabolo. I would like to know, why did the Department of Home Affairs previously hand out work visas to these charismatic churches? Why was it deemed to be something that... surely, South Africans, we can run our own churches. Why were these visas given to them, work visas? I would also like to know, how do we track people who are on visitors' visas? How are we able to see whether once their visitor visa has expired, are we able to track that they have left the country? If not, why not? I want to also know, why did the minister only pick up now that the Beshiris were here illegally on illegal documentation? The minister says an investigation has started, that they're looking into the officials that issued these fraudulent documents. But can you give us an indication as to when this investigation will be finalized? There's a lot of confusion. You spoke about the Beshiris leaving on a plane. The minister says he checked with the border at Lesotho. But did anybody go and check whether possibly there were movements between the Beitbridge border or even at Pongola? We speak about the Border Management Authority, but unfortunately the Border Management Authority is going to take a very long time to set up. So as we speak now, our borders for all intents and purposes are open. So we also need to hear from the minister, what are the plans in the interim to deal with the porousness of our borders? How will the minister deal with that? The issue of corruption. Corruption and syndicates are operating at our borders. Corruption is endemic within the department. What is the minister planning to do to address these challenges? President Ramaphosa, during a joint sitting on the 18th of September last year, said to us that he will ensure that we tighten up regulations to deter illegal migration. Yet we've seen no progress in that regard. So again, I would like to know what are the plans, Minister, going forward to ensure that we identify all illegal, undocumented foreign nationals within our country, and we need a plan today, a concrete plan on how we, because Beshiri is one issue, but it's a bigger failure of our system. And if there's no plan, then surely the minister must do the right thing and step aside, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Mukina.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine, I think that I'm partly covered by my colleagues. But I just wanted to ask a couple of, let's say about two or three questions. Minister, were you aware that the Bushiri had a diplomatic passport? He was in possession of a diplomatic, passport. If you're aware why there was no action that was taken, and we appreciate in terms of the report, in terms of what happens and trying to clear the Home Affairs, but we wanted to check. I think that there must be a thorough investigation and maybe to see how did he at the end leave the country at the port of entry. There needs to be a verification. Did he leave the country as himself, or did he disguise, or do you have any CCTV that maybe would have checked in terms if this is the individual, is it, was it actually him or not? I don't know if maybe Chairperson, this might be proper. I'm thinking that maybe we must institute what is called an inquiry maybe into the matter, where maybe the officials of Home Affairs, we can they can be asked these questions by the members, because it's a matter of a national importance now, and our people want to know and all of that. So there needs to be that kind of maybe I propose maybe an inquiry into the matter and actually check. You cannot have a situation where an individual just vanishes, a person just miraculously pushed out of the country. So we need to check into those things. It's quite a very worrying matter. Where the person, my organization is clear in terms of our stance, in terms of how we view, this issue of like Africa and all of that. We're always saying that Africa is one, but if there are thugs, a thug is a thug, and it must be arrested. So we need to make sure that we do a thorough investigation to check that, because there are serious allegations of money laundering and all of that that have been actually labeled into Pastor Obushiri. So, and also it was also not good for him to skip the country and undermine the laws of this country. And he goes and then after that he comes back and he's even holding a press conference addressing us as, the whole country itself. And also I think, Chair, this thing maybe it's more of a near national intelligence and the police. Maybe we might be a bit unfair in terms of asking those questions, but also maybe in terms of the immigration, security and all of that, it might be relevant to ask how did he actually leave the borders of South Africa. And also, I think that the police and the national intelligence must answer. It means that what they are busy dealing with is to do politics more than, to actually guard the country. In the same speed that they are busy with the investigations and arrests and all of that, with the politics that are happening in the country, there needs to be an energy that is put also into this matter, because our people, they want answers. I think I agree with my colleague who spoke, is that we were actually being undermined here. So, and there's been no press conference, coming from the government, a proper reasoning in terms of why Prophet Bushiri skipped the country, and there's been no explanation of that nature. I think some of the question, Chair, they've actually been covered by my colleague, but there's been an allegation, or there's been a talk that Bushiri had diplomatic, passport. If the Home Affairs is the aware, if they're not aware, if they're aware, why they've never done anything? Because he's not a member of state, or he's not a parliamentarian, or the terms, or a dignitary. I don't know how we can put that. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That is my addition. I put my two cents worth into this debate. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mukinas. Honorable Lekhwasa has now left. Can I take Honorable Makhluba?
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I would like to thank the Minister to explain the role of the Department of Home Affairs. But it is also clear, you know, comes from the explanation is that we need more departments either to appear before us in terms of their role, or either to appear before SOPA on what their role actually was in all of this. Now, this country has become a laughing stock. This is not the first time. It was the Gupta controversy. It was the al-Bashir controversy. And now we have a Poshiri controversy. Now, they say, talk is cheap, money buys the whiskey. This is exactly what this pastor, if you can call him a pastor, has done to the South Africans of this country. He is actually the opposite of a true prophet. He's someone with a Bible on his hand, taking this country for a drive, for a ride, and also with a hand on his Bible and swearing and does not obey this country's law. Well, there are so many explanations, but the biggest challenge for us, the biggest challenge for us is to locate the reasons where, when, and how this man has escaped. This is the biggest challenge that we are facing. Now, there's a cloud. There's a cloud around all of these departments in terms of all of these controversies. Firstly, I would also suggest that the minister in the presidency should also appear before us to come and explain what role or whether President Chakwera's visit has any role in Bushiri leaving this country, because that is the problem. What was his purpose of coming here? We understand the rationale and also understand that it's a long-planned visit. Yet, South Africans will remain speechless, especially what has been reported that the president of Malawi's flight has been delayed. So, what was the reason of all these delays? Now, how did he manage to leave this country? And that is the big question. If he went through the washing line, but definitely we are talking about people of five identity documents. I must remind this house that Andre Stanner also have numerous identities. And who said that he did not leave this country? You know, disguising himself to leave this country. Because what we are seeing here as members of parliament is a well-planned escape from this group, if I can say that word. On the other hand, also we would like to know, you know, what actions will be taken against the officials and why the Department of Home Affairs has taken so long to investigate this whole issue around Bushiri. Now, there's also rumors of extraditing. I think as a committee, we need to be informed what is the status of the extraditing process, what is happening. And then, Chair, I want to take something up with you personally. And Eldrin Sampier tweeted and he said that according to the Chair of the Department of Home Affairs, he says that Bushiri has left with the President of Malawi. But he cannot confirm this. If this is true, if Bushiri left with the president of Malawi, if this is true, then the president of Malawi is also an accomplice and must be charged for being the end of justice. Now, we hear about all of these advanced systems. Now, Home Affairs have a passenger advanced system. That system entails or tell you who bought a flight, where this specific person sits, and also whole details. When they close all the doors, they know exactly what. So what is happening with our system? Did it fail us? But it's clear, you know, our gut feeling, my gut feeling say this man is out here on a flight, finished and clear, non-negotiable. On the other hand, if you look at, we are looking for answers. We still need answers of the previous cases that we have seen. Now, it is international relations, state security, the police, it is defense. All of these departments need to come to the party
and to explain to South Africa their role. And I want to say, with due respect, I want to applaud Home Affairs for their role that they have played in opposing bail. The other question remains, where were the police in this case? Where were the police to visit these couple to see whether they are still within the borders of South Africa? It is easy to come in and it is easy to come out. So we need, as a collective, to stand up so that we can face this music of what has happened here, so that we can bear the problem, what has happened, who is the cause of this. I think South Africans are really angry of what has happened. And we need all of these departments. So, Chairperson, I think as a committee, we need to see how can we ask those departments to have this cluster as one, to give us a report on all of these, or rather, request from all of these departments to come and explain to us, because Home Affairs is now given their part of the story, while there are still other answers that we need as a committee to make our own assessment on what has transpired. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Mudis.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Let me also take this opportunity and appreciate the briefings from Minister Motsoaledi. Though, Chair, one must indicate that the briefing does not clarify the many questions that ourselves as members of this portfolio committee have, including the citizens of South Africa. We have always been concerned as a portfolio committee, and we have raised many issues regarding the security of our country, of our state, in the state of our border. And this security incident, Chair, further affirms many concerns that we have had. The Minister also mentioned that this issue does not revolve around the Home Affairs alone. And I would also want to reiterate where my colleagues would have also mentioned that we need to have all the cluster ministers, the security cluster ministers, coming to us in this committee or including other committees that would be involved to explain and be able to give us a proper and a thorough a briefing and an information regarding this issue. You know, the weaknesses of our state security are clearly exposed in this issue, because there is no information that is coming forward that whether or not prior to the country learning of the disappearance of the Bushiri, would there have been some sort of or some slight indication or detection from the security institutions that this man might be planning an escape. It is also disturbing, Chair, that our court, with all the evidence that the Department of Home Affairs would have provided during the bail application, the court still decided to grant this man a bail. It is very worrying and disturbing. Surely we should have known better by then. This man possesses many identification of passports. That man would have entered and out of South Africa illegally, so that the stay of the Bushiri's family in our country is illegal. That would have been reason enough for the courts not to allow him to pay, because there were many reasons that would have indicated that this man fly out of the country. And that has happened. We appreciate, Minister, that you have indicated that an investigation from the Department of Home Affairs, but we would want to emphasize that the sooner you conclude that investigation, the better, so that we can also better inform the people of this country of what would have happened. It's a big issue, and the people of South Africa, as it has been indicated, they are very angry. We are all worried about the state of our country and the security of our country. But the big question also that comes to mind is that how certain are we also that these pusheries have left the country indeed, outside of the video footage that he himself would have voluntarily sent out indicating his whereabouts that he is in Malawi. And through your engagement with your counterparts in Malawi, Minister, have they indicated surely that they are aware that the pusheries are in their country, or they also are still investigating if indeed the pusheries are in their country or not? I think those are other avenues that we need to explore, and we need an indication of whether this man indeed left the country or he is still in, because if he is not detected anywhere, how would have left the country? It leaves a lot to be desired, and a lot of questions answered. With the 5 passports that you made mention, there's a possibility again that there might be a passport or even more passports that we do not know. And that can also mean that they would have disguised, if they would have left the country through the ports of entry and exit, it means they would have disguised to be other people, and hence they would not be able to be seen, or hence our system are unable to, can be able to say whether or not their passports were utilized. This incident further affirms the committee's concerns regarding the funding for the BMA. And we must be able to emphasize as a committee and push for the, that the BMA must be funded adequately so that it can soon start to set up and do its, and that would be better for the country. So we really need to push for the BMA to be funded. I think part of the investigations, Minister, that you need to embark on are on the processes in the beginning when the pusheries entered our country, those years that would have indicated.
We have lost you, Honorable Minister.
Person, can you hear me now?
We have lost you.
Can you hear me now?
And we have requested that you show your video. It was a request from Parliament Communication. And I don't see you anywhere.
That person, can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Unfortunately, due to load shedding, Chairperson, I struggled with connection from the household. So I went out and drove off. So I'm connecting from the car, hence I'm unable to can open my video.
Okay, proceed.
Thank you. I was saying then that the part of the investigation that needs to take place is from the first years when the pusheries would have entered the country. Those officials of the Department of Home Affairs who would have processed their documentation from the beginning needs to be investigated up until now. I think, Chair, what I would want to emphasize on, though, is the fact that the investigation must be done promptly and there needs to be answers as soon as possible. But also of concern is the minister mentions that the plane was searched. I want to understand that the plane was searched for the purpose of looking for the pusheries. And if that's the case, does it mean there was already a suspicion that the pusheries might utilize the Malawi plane or the president of Malawi's plane that was in the country to escape or not? Or the process of searching that plane, it was a normal process that the department then needed to do? Or was it based on a suspicion that was already there that the pusheries might want to flee the country? Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Mudisa. Honorable Janji. It's Honorable Janji here. Okay, thank you. Honorable Chaban.
Congratulations.
Oh, before Chaban, Honorable Veteran Likota.
Yeah, I was just reporting that I'm present.
No, you can proceed, Honorable Veteran.
Okay, Comrade Chairperson, thank you very much. I must admit that I arrived, I managed to get into the meeting later, but it was when the minister was still briefing us. Let me just say, for starters, I was really alarmed to hear.
Are you able to show your face, Honorable Veteran?
I don't know how I can try.
Okay.
I don't know
proceed, Pilar, just hit me. Yes, I see you now.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. I was saying that I was really alarmed to hear that the president of Malawi came here on a diplomatic trip, that he landed at Waterkloof Air Force Base, but that some of the people that were part of his trip landed at O.R. Tambo, which means they were not traveling with him. They were not traveling with him. Chairperson, when we served in government, some of us served in government much earlier. When the president was leaving this country, visiting another country, everybody who was part of his trip had to be part of the trip. Where we were going to land, we were going to land with the president of the country. And when we left to come back, there was no one who was going to stay around looking for sheep or cattle or to buy shoes and all of that. We had gone there on a national trip. And we came back as part of that national trip. The first thing we need to make clear to our government, no one should ever leave this country and visit another country in the name of the government. Similarly, we must not allow any country to send its leadership, ministers or otherwise, in this country. If they are coming as part of the diplomatic mission, let them be part of the diplomatic mission. And when it is finished, they must all leave with the leader of the delegation. Because otherwise these diplomatic interactions becomes plots to bring criminals in here, leave some of them here, take others out, and so on. Public funds are not for that purpose. What are these people that were left here? What did they come here to do? What are they doing that we South Africans did not agree to, did not know about? It's not on the records of why they came here. This issue is not about home affairs alone. This issue is about the whole of government. All of us, starting with the president to the lowest. If the leadership of the country does not know that it's not elected to go shopping in Jamaica, and so on and so on, then something must be done. We've got to take the leadership of our country, all the people elected to lead, must be taken on a training course that tells them, you are not there to do your own business. You are there to lead the people of South Africa, to work for them. And the money that you are going to be traveling with is for that. Anybody that wants to come from another country here in the name of Ghana, Nigeria, whatever else and so on, we must make it clear to them, you are only allowed to come there, to come here to South Africa. If you come on a diplomatic mission, it must be a diplomatic mission. You do that, you finish and get out. Then we cannot say, we don't know this. And when somebody who says is a son of God, is sent by God, can only come here and do what God has instructed him to do. Don't come here, steal passport, break our laws and all of that, and run out like a criminal. It's not done like that. But our government must know that. And one of our comrades here in this committee made a very important point, which I want to underline. It is that all the members of this security cluster, all of them, should be involved if there's a diplomatic thing coming in here. Or they must delegate people that are going to watch that everything that is being done is in keeping with diplomacy. And perhaps one of the things that should long have been told is that that Waterkloof Air Force Base is a premier military setting for the Air Force. South Africa's Air Force is the premier South African Air Force base. We can't have any Tom, Dick and Harry running in and out there. And we can't have the Guptas coming for a wedding, landing there. That there, day and night, that military Air Force base should be studying the air, the skies of South Africa. No aeroplane coming from any direction may come into South African airspace without the Air Force knowing where it comes from, who is in that plane, what are they coming to do here. If we don't know, we commandeer that thing and let it tell it where to stop and go and check who's in there, what are they carrying, where are they taking it to, and so on. But we seem to have a security cluster that is sleeping day and night, which is why Bushiri can run in here with his girlfriends and wives and whatnot with 15 passports. What is our security people doing? And comrades, all the people studying in schools, we must educate our children to know that we are a country called South Africa. We are all the time in danger of being attacked by other countries if we clashed with them. If the other countries felt that we threatened them, they can attack us. And therefore, that's why we have a defense force. That's why we take taxpayers' money, train young men and women as members of the Navy, members of the Air Force, landward forces, the army, medical section. We train those young people and in this way and whatnot and educate them. in the advanced, most advanced military equipment, so that they can defend our country if it is attacked by nations which have hostile intentions to us. It's important for all South Africans, black, white, whatever you call them, they must all know this, that they are in danger. And we call it the defense force, because it's a force not to attack others, but to defend us. But our defense force must be awake. It must be fit. It must be well equipped. It must study and follow all the military techniques and all of that, so that it can use that knowledge to defend the people of South Africa. Now we have little Bushiri coming in here and messing up with our country. Some Mrs. Bushiri telling us we must change the prosecution. Who is he to tell South Africans who must be the prosecutor in a court case? We are not. Our government must really wake up to this responsibility. We must make sure that this is so. Because today, because there's peace, it looks like there's nothing. And one other thing, Chairperson, I just want to mention. My dear South Africans, we must forget about this thing, that we are all South Africans, we all are one and everything. There's nothing like that. The reason there is borders between us and Mozambique, the reason there's borders between us and Nigeria, between us and Ethiopia and so on, is because we are two different nations. And sometimes the interests of two different nations can collide with each other. That's how wars have been fought. That's why organizations you have like the United Nations Organization, the African Union, and so on, they are intended on a daily basis to manage relations between the countries. But it will not always be like that. That's why at some point there was the First World War. That's why there was the Second World War. That is why there are wars in the Middle East as we speak today. And that's why there are wars in various regions of the world. Because neighbors clash and neighbors fight. And when they fight, there's no quota given. So it will not always be like this. It will not always be peace and then you can go and play soccer and all of that. It's not always like that. And that is why we need to make sure that we educate South Africans to understand what human nature is made of. And so, right now, Bushiri is gone to his country. He's there. I don't know if comrades know, but what I know is that he was the biggest sponsor of the election campaign of the present president of that country. I'm not saying anything more than to say that that's a factual thing. It's like that. So we have now to think very carefully. What is all this saying to us? Our security cluster must work. The other clusters must also work. The comrades who are in the diplomatic missions and all of that, foreign affairs, is diplomacy. Always to try and discuss and find ways and so on. But diplomacy fails now and then. It fails. Because when people are angry, they change their attitude. And then you find suddenly that you have to resort to other means to defend yourself. We really need a big, big discussion. And comrades are right that we need to get the whole of these clusters. We must get the cluster, first of all, the security cluster. I do think that we must sit with the security cluster and tell them, you can't let people walk in and out of Johannes O.R. Tambo, getting passports and whatnot and so on and things. And in each and every department, home affairs, foreign affairs, defense, security, we all of us must make sure that only the right people are there. That there at Waterkloof Air Force Base, nobody lands there who's not supposed to land there. There's only one person that can give an order for people to come and land there and whatnot. It's the president of the country, the commander-in-chief. And even he, the constitution requires him, if he has deployed the armed force, he must come to parliament and say to parliament, I, for these reasons and that reasons and that reason, I've sent so many soldiers to that country with so many weapons, with so many cannons, with so many that and so on. He must do that because he must account for his actions, so that the people know what is going on. But just now, everybody is doing whatever they feel like doing. Comrade Chairperson, I hope I didn't overtake my time, but thank you very much that we are dealing. We must pursue this matter. We must pursue this matter.
Thank you, Veteran Gordon. Honorable Chaban.
No, thanks, Chair. Very much for the opportunity, Chair. Members of the committee have already raised certain issues which were one could have also contributed to this discussion. There are a few areas, Chair, that I wanted to contribute on this issue of the pastor alleged. One is that, Chair, we ought to reaffirm our immigration policies, but also note that there's lack of enforcement on them. And this matter has been exposed to us on the escape of Mr. Bushiri. And you must appreciate, Chairperson, in the sequence of this matter that has been handled by the law enforcement and the Department of Home Affairs to expose these fraudulent activities of stealing documents and subjecting these pastors to the court of law. I think that is an expression and demonstration of the capacity of the state to respond to these immigration policies and other laws of the country to curb this corruption. I'm raising this matter, Chair, that it appears that there's a strong view, which I think the latter speaker is raising, that the security cluster is sleeping. And contrary to that effect, if this man has been identified as committed or exposed his fraudulent activities, the law enforcement agency taking its course for him to appear in a court of law, that is a clear demonstration of work in immigration policies that are working. So I think we must be able to have strength to give credit where it's due and the work of our colleagues in government that they're dealing with. But secondly, Chair, is to accept and appreciate the report of the minister, the brief that has been given. And this is a process of accounting to the nation. Though there's a clear indication from the minister that he himself can't able to respond, and which is something that as a collective of part of the executive, he should have authority of clarity on matters on his hands to able to respond on detail in his area of responsibility. There are two issues, Chair, that I think has been built as a foundation now. One is that if the minister says clearly that the systems which they monitored, there's no demonstration that, or there's no sign that these people have moved outside the country through the port of entry or OR Tambo, it may demonstrate that our systems are working. But on the other hand, it may affirm the assumption that all of us we have that this man has moved through the plane of the president. If that is an affirmation that the systems they've checked all on the ground, there's no movement, there's no sign, therefore, will society may assume that it is true that this man and his colleagues have moved through the president's plane. I think that's the two points that I think the cabinet cluster of security must be grappling with, which I appreciate, Chair, that this report is an interim to brief us on the work that the Department of Home Affairs has done, which is credible. But we must wait for the final report and give government time, determined time, the security cluster to finalize its detailed report to be brought to the peace and stability cluster in Parliament, so that we have one report with authority of details. That, for example, Chair, it will be able to tell us how his fleet of cars have moved out of the border. I think the minister that he may have issues. You can ask the minister, for example, how, as has been alleged, his fleet of cars, how did they move through the port of entry? And I think the minister will have authority because it's this area of a responsibility in the border and so forth and so on. I agree, Chair, and I support full that we must determine, give space for government, all department and security agencies to exert detailed reports on what happened on the issue of the escape of Mr. Bushiri, because these two assumptions may remain that the systems of Home Affairs, which the department has always briefed the department on, that the biometric systems, they can able to detect any movement of any person, any material that has been moved, it may direct that these systems are working. Therefore, we're left with the issue that it means the assumptions are correct that this fellow has moved through the president's plane. And Chairperson, I think that should be our view, that let's assume that we give the minister and the executive collective have a comprehensive report that will come back to the portfolio committee, to the peace and stability cluster to report to us. You are aware, Chair, that tomorrow the parliament will be dealing with this matter. We'll be receiving oral response from the peace and stability cluster. And this matter may arise. But as a committee, you must be clear, Chair, that even if it arrives in parliament tomorrow, we must be convinced that the peace and stability cluster at the level of government has not exhausted its final details of the report to bring the report to the parliament, because all of us and with our people, we need one report that will articulate the weaknesses that are identified and the actions that must be taken to those who have contributed to this transit of this fellow. When I say action must be taken, Chair, it's action in all levels. If ministers are found to be involved, if staff or management are found to be involved, that report must expose that and action must be taken by those who have authority to take those actions around those people. Chairperson, the BMA becomes central on this matter. And I think that this assertion that this BMA will take 30 years or 40 years to be implemented, I don't think that is a correct posture that we as members of the committee must advance. One is that we members of the committee, we must appreciate that it's central and we must move that this implementation of the Border Management Authority must be urgent to its implementation. And funding, as Honorable Mudisa has raised, become central. Because part of this area, this matter of BMA, it will able to mitigate some of the issues that we as members of parliament, we have accepted that we have witnesses in our border areas are porous. Hence, we have taken this decision in the fifth parliament. And now in the sixth parliament that the president has signed, that it's necessary for this border management in order to keep some of these areas that were raised. Chairperson, we must condemn the moral character of the pastor. I think Honorable Lukota is raising it sharply. We must condemn the moral character of the pastor because it's contrary to the moral standing of our pastoral authority everywhere. For him to have undermined the condition that they have exerted on him and his colleagues, they have undermined the constitution of the republic, they have undermined his constituency to which he himself, he thinks, is high health morality. But Chairperson must also appreciate the law enforcement agency for taking steps already within the subject protocols to make sure that this man and his colleagues are brought to book to this country. And we must monitor that process closely, Chair, to make sure that justice, our people see for themselves that our country and the law enforcement, the Constitution of the Republic, is able to track any other person who breaks this law of the country. So we must appreciate our government and the law enforcement agency for the steps that have already been taken through SADC protocols for this man to be brought back to the country and face his corrupt activities that he himself and the team has been exposed. Chairperson, we appreciate this report this draft report notes of the minister. We want the collective report of the government, assurance to our people, efforts and enforcement to the law. But minister, you must able to have capacity to say to us now how this man has his fleet. If you are saying the systems that you have checked, persons movement, how, if it's correct that this fleet has moved out of the country, those systems, are they able to have exposed this transit of his fleet to another country? Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much. I think all members have already spoken. And I appreciate that we are saying that this is still a preliminary report because from where I'm sitting, a lot of things do not add up from the report that we got. But from the view that it's a preliminary report, we will have to take it from there. It is indeed quite true that this matter is very scandalous and very embarrassing. And South Africans do need answers on what exactly has happened. I want to give you, Minister, just a few minutes to round up with a view that if the preliminary report was still going to engage with a complete report that will come from all other stakeholders that are needed to deal with the matter. So I'm requesting you to just do a roundup without opening a lot of other things from where I'm sitting, because okay, over to you, Minister.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity. I do understand, Chairperson, when you say I must just round up and not raise many other issues. But you announced at the beginning of this session that is being broadcast live, and South Africans are watching. So I'll be compelled to respond to some of the issues and clarify them, because it cannot be that this session becomes the one that sort of misinforms the country, because some of the issues raised here need to be corrected. Chairperson, the first thing I want to correct is this issue of visits. Honorable Moyala asked us a question. Why are people remaining here? Honorable Lokota very bravely and eloquently stated that when people visit with the president, they all must come back. Chairperson, I've been in government for quite some time. I've attended many bi-national meetings, and I've attended meetings where we encourage people during our opening speeches that when this official visit is over, please, you are welcome to visit South Africa. We have got places of interest. That is done. That is done always to encourage tourism in the country. The last trip I took to the DRC, which was a bi-national commission, a minister and a deputy minister remained because they wanted to visit the Congo River. I know it because they recruited me, but unfortunately, I could not make it at that time. So people do visit on official mission and remain in countries. How many times have people gone to the U.S. with their presidents during the United Nations General Assembly? And when it's over, they remain in New York, others visit other places. So I'm just saying, Chairperson, I understand very deeply that yourselves and South Africans are very aggrieved and angry about this Bushiri matter. I too, I must assure you. On the day he was given bail, I was very, very angry and dejected, and still am, because I never believed in my wildest dream that Bushiri would be given bail, because I suspected what will happen. So, but in that anger, I'm sure we should not cut our noses to spite our faces. People do visit and remain in countries and visit and go and do other things, etc., etc. As long as we be able to account for them, that's why we're able to account that one person who came with the president did not board at Waterkloof, three did not board at O.R. Tambo. We are not reporting it as a miracle. It has happened before. We have done that ourselves when we visit other countries. And I don't think we should then become a country that chases everybody out when we are able to visit their country. I've attended many AU missions, which when they finish, people come at different times because they've got something to do in Addis Ababa. So I just wanted to correct that issue that there was nothing untoward in people remaining and not going back home. It has always been happening. It also happens in other countries. Now, Honorable Moyala, you also asked about the issue of bail and revocation. I can report to you, yes, that yesterday bail was revoked and a warrant of arrest was issued. And when an warrant of arrest is issued, I heard somebody say Bushiri is on the way to Ghana. The reason that it was rushed, that a warrant of arrest be issued, is because once it's issued, it is given to Interpol, and every country which is a member of Interpol is forced to arrest such a person once they leave. So at the present moment, in terms of international codes, immediately the warrant of arrest was issued yesterday. It means wherever Bushiri goes, if he goes to a country which is a member of Interpol, that country is forced by law, not by its liking, by international law to arrest him. As to whether when they arrest him, they will bring him back, that's another story. But I can confirm to this committee that a warrant has been issued and bail has been revoked. The issue of the cluster, Chairperson, I want to mention that what I mentioned at the beginning of this meeting. I belong to the JCPS cluster, the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security cluster, which is co-chaired by the Minister of Defense and the Minister of Police. I cannot speak on their behalf in this meeting. I did warn, really. I did warn that I'm not here to speak on their behalf. At the right time, they will speak. But just to inform South Africans, you are aware that the GCIS in the presidency released a statement about what has happened. It did release a statement to try and inform the country preliminary what has happened, including also the suspicion that the president of Malawi came here to fetch Bushiri or to live with him. It was cleared in the statement by the GCIS. The issues raised by Mr. Ruos about how a person who is a foreigner can register a business. It is allowed internationally. You can register a company while being a visitor. There are many people who visit other countries and register businesses, register companies, I mean to say. But in terms of us in South Africa, once that company registered start conducting business, then you are forced to apply for a business visa. So applying for, registering a company is done through CIPD, which falls under Department of Trade and Industry. It's not a function of Home Affairs. Where Home Affairs comes in is when that business starts operating, starts running business, you have got to get the business visa. If you don't get it, it becomes illegal. So I just wanted to clarify that point too, that the act of registering a company itself is not illegal, not in South Africa, not in many other countries I know of around the world. It is allowed. So a person with a visitor's visa can register a company. And the whole Department of Home Affairs did give Bushiri such a visitor's visa. Where we have got issue with him was when his businesses started operating without him applying for a business visa. I'm also want to inform assure Honorable Ruos, yes, the act has since been amended when they realized this disjuncture between CIPD and the Department of Home Affairs, so that we are able to communicate. But the actual interaction will happen when we have got the new system with ABIS, which we reported to this committee, the National Information System, which, you know, we're busy establishing. And ABIS, which we reported to this committee, is going to be the basis of such a business. Honorable Tito, how did Bushiri enter Malawi? I'm sure that question can be asked Malawians. We have got no idea. We don't really get interest on how people enter their countries. I'm sure Malawians will ask for that. The Honorable Kanyile, the issue of footage out of Waterloo Air Force Base, that type of footage cannot be offered by me. Waterloo Air Force Base belong to the Ministry of Defense, and they are in charge there. And as you know, in every port of entry, we post Home Affairs officials. There are no Home Affairs officials who are resident and posted forever at Waterloo Air Force Base. Home Affairs is only informed if a plane is going to land, which is not carrying the military people, but is carrying civilians, but who are diplomats who come with president, because Waterloo is a national key point. As to whether the laws allow for footage from a national key point to be released publicly, that I do not know. You will have to check with the Minister of Defense. Chairperson, I've also warned, because there's an issue about what are we doing about immigration laws. I came into this committee to report to you that the department is busy developing a new policy on the Citizenship Act, on the Immigration Citizenship Act, which was passed in 1995, on the Refugees Act passed in 1998, on the Immigration Act passed in 2002 and came into effect in 2004. I told you we are reviewing them, because at the time we passed them, it was at a different time in history, like 1995 when we did citizenship. You'll understand what type of country South Africa is, what did we think about the world and all that. We believe it's time to review that. And I reported in front of this committee that process has started. The issue of what we are doing about BMA, I've also come to this committee to report. If the committee wants me to report how far we are with the Border Management Authority, I can come and report, but I was not aware today that such a report will be wanted. The question from Honorable Kanyile that the Department of Home Affairs does not respond when there are written questions. I'm hearing this for the first time. The secretariat of this committee, time and again, put in front of the committee questions that have not been responded to. We did respond. If there's any one question, Honorable Kanyile provided to Home Affairs for written response, which we didn't respond to, please show us. Honorable Lizelle said if there's no, that the minister must put a plan here about these issues of immigration and all that. I did not prepare for that because that's not what I was asked. I was asked specifically to come and report about the issues of Bushiri. If this committee want to know about these plans, because they are there, Honorable Lizelle van der Merwe, I can assure you. You also ask a question, why do we give visas to charismatic churches? Home Affairs is no longer doing that. Yes, it used to. All the priests who come here were given general work visas, but it has been withdrawn from charismatic churches. It is given to other churches because they've got form and structure. You are aware that churches like Methodist Church, Catholic Church, what I call conventional churches, they send their priests all over the world and they are employed. They've employed them. It's not only in South Africa. They send them all over and countries welcome them. We give them general work visa because we know their employer, if we call that employment. That used to happen with charismatic churches. It was stopped when it was realized that people come here to establish churches, left, right, and center, and they were mushrooming. The Department of Home Affairs stopped. What we give them is visitor's visa, which is what was given to Bushiri. And that visitor's visa, we believe if they do any work, it must be voluntary work. That is the situation now. It's no longer allowed in the past. So no person from a charismatic church will get the work visa from Home Affairs.
Thank you.
Chairperson, just one more issue, Chairperson, please. Honorable Lukota, even during your time when you were the Minister of Defense, heads of state intelligence used to land at Waterloo Air Force Base. The issues of the Guptas was very unfortunate and they were debated very much. But Waterloo Air Force Base is a national key point, but heads of state always land there. They also landed during your time, Honorable Lukota. They are still doing so. What becomes wrong is the people who landed as an advanced ship and said they want to leave via Waterloo. That's why we refused. And that's why there was a delay. That delay was caused by us refusing for other people who are not authorized to leave from Waterloo Air Force Base. So that was still respecting, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. We're going to step off this item now. I think the whole debacle does expose itself how the Department of Home Affairs is working. And I think it's quite very clear to every member and so on. I think our resolve is that this is a preliminary report. We will need a much more detailed report that will include a footage of what has happened 3 hours before the flight has landed. I have said this time that the complaints and information that was brought to me that necessitated me calling a meeting was that Bushiri had left with the plane of the president of Malawi. Having received that information as the chairperson of the committee, my responsibility will be to call the minister responsible for Home Affairs because those issues were raised with me. And the minister came here, he has raised a lot of issues. And it will appear at this point the minister does not know how Bushiri went to Malawi. And with this preliminary report, we will await a report that is consolidated. And it's a cluster report which will be detailing everything that has been said. And I would like to thank the minister for the time he has spent to respond to the questions of the members and give himself time to come to the committee of parliament to report. Minister, if you decide to remain in the
Honorable Chair, may I please be recorded?
Yes, you're recognized.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to move to another area where I think my case is stronger. I do acknowledge that the report that is before us, preliminary report, with that being said, I have one question that I raised earlier on, maybe because the network connects with the minister, which I would like to raise right now before the minister maybe is excused.
No, I'm sorry that you will not be able to do that, because until now, you are not properly audible. So I think I can't hear me yourself properly at this point. So it will be a multiplication of our efforts by zero to allow you to proceed when we are not hearing you properly because of your network problems. So I would advise that let's write them down, send them to the minister and send them to me. I'll do a facilitation of us having to get them properly recorded and be presented to the committee and the minister in an orderly and a dignified way.
It's okay. If I'm not audible, I think that we can do. I'll definitely send my question.
Thank you very much. Minister, you are granted indulgence to leave. If you decide to remain, it will be because you are interested on the issues, because the electoral amendment laws bill is also a matter that affects your portfolio. Can we now take the IEC? The work that we're expecting from the IEC is as follows, to respond, because we've made the work easier last week. We've also invited the IEC last week to listen to what members have said and the concerns which were raised. So I don't want the IEC to be all over in this matter. I want the IEC to answer the specific issues that were raised by the members of the public and by members of the committee and how we want to deal with the matter going forward. Members, it's not the last time we'll be dealing with this matter of the IEC, even after they've responded. We'll still have another bite in the future to look into this matter thoroughly and take decisions in an orderly and in deep and dignified way in dealing with the electoral amendment laws bill. So I'm handing over to you, Chairperson Mashini. I'm very sorry that you have had to sit in the meeting, but I hope that because it was in the public interest that we dealt with this matter in the manner we did. But I'm handing over to you now to give us a clear brief of how we're dealing with this matter in the light of you having been part of our meetings all the time to deal with these concerns and the disputes raised by the public. Over to you, Chairman.
Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the Honourable Home Affairs, Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs, and Honourable Advocate Bong, Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Mutsaledi, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs, members of the media and members of the public, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Electoral Commission of South Africa, let me express our warm greetings to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee and to all present and watching this briefing today. Thanks to the committee for its work in the processing of the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill as a matter of importance and urgency. As the commission, we are also grateful for the vibrant and extensive process of public engagement on the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill, which adds immensely to both the quality and the buy-in into the process. The Commission would like to express its gratitude to all the stakeholders who have submitted comments, suggestions, inputs into the portfolio committee's legislative amendment process. The fact that these are relatively technical amendments and they receive such widespread response during the public consultation phase is very encouraging about the liveliness of our democracy. We are informed by the Secretariat of the Portfolio Committee that almost 12,000 submissions via the DA South Africa website were received, and a further 28 submissions from other stakeholders were submitted. This must then be indicative of our electoral democracy and the legislative framework that remains an issue of significant popular interest. So we welcome this particular interest, Honorable Chair, and we welcome all the inputs received as a means to both enrich and expand the legislative process. And we believe that it adheres to the process of being inclusive, consultative, but also it will help us to have a comprehensive outcome. Honorable members, before I respond to the various submissions we've received, allow me then to introduce members of the Commission present today in this virtual presentation. I am joined by my fellow commissioners, the Vice Chairperson, Janet Love, Commissioner Dr. Nomsa Masuru, and Commissioner Mr. Msutu Miebia. Further, from the administration, I'm also joined by the Chief Electoral Officer, Mr. Mamabulo, the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer for Operations, Mr. Shiburi, the Chief Executive for Party Funding, Mr. George Matlango, the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer for Outreach, Mr. Mosri, together with senior officials from the Commission, including our legal services, Ms. Rath, and the Commission services, Mr. Kilembe, as well as our communications officials. And so one is very pleased that we have a number of other IEC officials that are following these proceedings because they also are keen to see the inputs that we are making to this process. Honorable Chair, indeed, as we are aware, Section 5 of the Electoral Commission Act mandates the Commission to, I quote, to continually review electoral legislation and propose electoral legislation and to make recommendations in connection therewith, of quote. So this act of amending the laws continuously or periodically by the Commission is actually an essential part of the role of the Commission so that it can then be in a position to respond to changes in our environment and ensure that legislation remains contemporary, relevant, and responsive. So the changes that are proposed in the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill before the House are all intended to enhance and improve the legal framework within which elections are conducted in our country. And these include measures to streamline the administrative processes and reduce the administrative burden on political parties and contestants. Further, they clarify processes by which may have been subject to confusion or different interpretations. And it is to bring the legislation in line with the advances in technology and other developments within the electoral democracy sphere. Honorable members, without going into the details of our responses, which both the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer and the Chief Electoral Officer will do shortly, allow me to briefly address one issue which appears to have dominated the submissions and public response to the bill. This is the proposed amendments to Section 38 of the Electoral Act and Section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act. The proposed amendments seek to provide an enabling provision for the Electoral Commission to pilot a form of electronic voting or accounting as part of our exploration of a future electoral solutions. The technology advances coupled with increase in resource constraints and the desire to provide a highly accurate result as soon as possible after elections necessitates that we assess the potential rewards and the risk of digital technology throughout the electoral cycle. Therefore, honorable members, the most important consideration is that without this enabling or provision, we are unable to put some of those approaches to test and to learn how they perform within the unique South African conditions. So the Commission, we have noted submissions by a number of individuals and stakeholder organizations who voiced consent that the wording of these amendments provided a blank slate for the Electoral Commission to change the voting procedures unilaterally. I would like to assure the honorable members and the members of the public, as well as those who made those submissions, that this was never the intention. And any fears that the Electoral Commission is trying to surreptitiously or stealthily introduce a new voting procedure is completely incorrect. We do not believe and intend to act in any way other than what has been a tradition of the institution since its founding, that we've set the precedent and set the tone to achieve nothing less than what is an optimal way of us achieving our constitutional mandate. And a transparent voting and counting procedure is at the heart of the integrity of the electoral processes. We have seen in recent times the issues around the elections, the counting, both in our country and throughout the world, that this area can actually plunge a country into disarray unless it is properly managed. So we are exercising our utmost responsibility and as professionally as possible to ensure that we do not provide a disservice to our democracy and to our country. And therefore, any proposed amendments to this stem from an inclusive process of engagement, consultation, and widespread support from all stakeholders. Of course, not everybody would embrace new developments at the same time. Hence, the emphasis we're putting at this stage for us as the committee, as the commission, is to create the space and the platform to actually examine and explore together the options through the piloting in controlled and limited areas. But as we remember again, the electoral processes and decisions of the committee, of the commission, are taken in partnership and in consultation at all material times with the stakeholders, and paramount is there in that is that these things are done via the political party liaison committee structure. And therefore, that is the good practice that has been established since inception, whereby once the commission has been enabled to explore and to introduce any solutions, it then goes through that particular process. And that being said, noting the concerns expressed, the commission is therefore proposing redrafting the relevant clauses to clarify the intent and to limit the provision to this specific intention. That is, we need to have an enabling legislation for us to explore and to be in a position to scientifically make a considered view as to what would be the best solutions for us going forward. And on behalf of the Commission, Honourable Members, and through you, Honourable Chair, let me again express our thanks to the committee and yourself, as well as the Minister and of the Home Affairs and the members of the Portfolio Committee for expediting the processing of these amendments. Indeed, next year local government elections are less than 12 months away, and the finalization of the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill through the National Assembly and National Council of Provinces prior to the year-end break will allow us this necessary certainty to proceed with our preparations. And with these brief introductory remarks, allow me through you, Chair, to invite both the CEO and the Deputy CEO to take the committee through our responses to the specific submissions in more details. I thank you.
Chairperson of the committee, Chairperson of the committee, the Minister.
Unmute yourself, CEO.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Shiburu will lead the responses. Thank you.
Chairperson, good morning. We have used the template as provided by the content advisor, including the summaries that were considered by the portfolio committee on the 10th. The only submission that we're tabling for the first time is that by Amabungani Center for Investigative Journalism, which was provided to the Electoral Commission by the portfolio committee post the meeting on the 10th. Predictably, the submission by Amabungani relates only to clause 14, relates only to clause 8, which deals with the amendments to section 16 of the Electoral Act, and their submission is summarized from the bottom of page 14 onwards. In crafting the responses, we have also considered the views of members of the committee that were expressed on the 10th. And the submission by the Electoral Commission will be found in the fourth column of the document. And as the Chair has indicated, the substantive input relates to clauses 14 and 21. On the first page of the document, Chair, the first submission relates to the work of Parliament. We don't offer a response. We offer a response on the second input. There again, what we're saying is that notwithstanding the fact that this bill is technical in nature and it does not occasion any impact on the economy, we have nonetheless completed a socio-economic impact assessment, which assessment was approved by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, and we have provided same to the committee. The next submission on the next page, Chair. There is a submission from R. Seta and Mr. C. Achibot. At the heart of the submission are that the bill may be constitutionally non-compliant. Again, here we submit that the bill has been certified for constitutional compliance by the state law advisor, and we think that the bill will stand constitutional muster. The next submission is as it relates to clause 6, Chair. On page 2. The submission is from the Institute for Race Relations, Dear South Africa, and about 846 other persons. At the heart of the submissions are the following. One, there is a worry that the IEC intends to remove the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, and further that this is linked, they link the removal of the concurrence of the minister with the intention of the Electoral Commission to procure e-voting machines. Again here, Chair, the submission is as follows. The intention is only to remove redundant provisions and not to remove the oversight of Parliament nor the approval requirement and concurrence by the Minister of Finance. By way of example, Section 23(3) in the Electoral Commission Act, as it currently stands, was written into the law way before the PFMA, when the Exchequer Act 1975 was still the relevant piece of legislation. With the advent of the PFMA, that clause 23(3) has been rendered redundant, in that the public finances are now administered in terms of the PFMA, particularly Section 5 of the PFMA, which says that the Minister of Finance is the head of the National Treasury, and that in Section 6, among other things, he must prescribe measures that promote and enforce transparency and effective management of public resources. And again, in terms of that provision in the MTF, the budget of the Electoral Commission is approved by Treasury in terms of the MTF for a period of 3 years. So there is no way that the IEC could derive a budget outside the side of the National Treasury and without the approval of the National Minister. In conclusion on this aspect, Chair, we submit that the removal of Section 23(3) of the Electoral Commission Act is not intended to diminish the approval responsibility of the minister, nor is it intended to remove the role of the Parliament has oversight on the budget of the Electoral Commission. Instead, the retention of the section has the potential to create dissonance between the PFMA and the Electoral Act. So the removal of Section 23(3) is to bring the Commission Act in line with the PFMA. On page 3 at the bottom, the next submission relates to clause 9, which impacts sections 24 capital A as well as section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act and the Electoral Act respectively. In the nutshell, the submission raised two important factors. The first one, the submission asking that section 24A be circumscribed to maintain flexibility for voters who are unable to vote in their voting station. But it also calls that in doing so, we must not imperil the voting process, nor should we dilute the integrity of the electoral outcomes. We agree with the sentiment of the submission, and this is the intention of the amendment in section 24A. The amendment is intended to further regulate section 24A such that we can still maintain the integrity of the electoral outcomes. Where we differ though is the use of a geocode instead of the use of an address, and we differ for the following reasons. The members of the committee will recall that in terms of the judgment of the Constitutional Court in 2016 in the CAM and Mpropo matters, one of the twin functional values of an address on the voter's roll was enunciated by that court as that of allowing and facilitating for political contestants to canvass voters. We submit that an address is a recognizable form of providing a description of a geographic area. And we also submit that if you replace an address with a geocode, that renders the functional value of an address nugatory, and it goes against the order of the court, in that for you to interpret a geocode, you require to input that into some form of geographic information system so that that geocode can be interpreted or decoded into a geographic area. So here the amendment seeks to amend section 24A, and we all know that section 24A deals with the right or ability of any voter to present themselves in national and provincial elections at any voting station and ask to vote at that station. What we are doing is to remove that, and limit it, that section 24A must be exercised by way of pre-notice to the Electoral Commission. What that does, it enables us then to remove the voter from the segment of the voter's roll at which they are registered and place their name in the segment of the voter's roll at which they intend to vote. Secondly, it allows us to also manage our logistics better so that we don't have reports of shortages of ballot papers. Thirdly, it removes the theoretical possibility that persons may vote on more occasions than they are entitled to vote in terms of the law. The last part of our response on that page 4, going on to page 5, deals with the amendments that we're proposing to section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act. This section deals with voters for whom the Electoral Commission does not have an address on the voter's roll. Ahead of the general elections last year, we amended the Electoral Act to introduce a provision that makes it clear that a voter who is registered on the voter's roll but for whom the Electoral Commission does not have an address is still entitled to vote. What we're doing now, we are introducing a mirror provision to facilitate the continued franchise of voters for whom the Electoral Commission does not have an address to participate in municipal election. So a voter for whom we do not have an address on voting day, they are guaranteed to participate on condition they supply a presiding officer with an address, and if that address locates within the boundary of their voting station, that voter will be permitted to vote. We now deal with our response to clause 13 on page 6. The submission are from Dear South Africa, and in this instance, we agree with the submissions with the following clarification. In terms of the text of the Act, the content that is in bracket is intended to be removed from the bill. So it would appear that the submission confused what we are removing in the bill and what we are proposing as new amendments. Our response is as follows. One, we agree with the submission that 15 days may not be reasonable for persons to give notice of their intention to vote outside of the Republic. For this reason, and you'll see in the body of the bill, we are removing the requirement that a voter who is registered on a segment of the voter's roll must give notice of their intention to vote within 15 days of promulgation. We do this by removing this from the Act and placing it in the election timetable. That way, we can use technology in order to afford citizens more notice period to the chief electoral officer. So in other words, a person does not have to give notice within 15 days. We will regulate that period in the election timetable with the intention of making the period longer than 15 days. The second key requirement that we're removing in the law as it stands is that in terms of the extant law, a voter who is registered, for example, in against the segment of the voter's roll in England, South Africa House, in terms of the law as it currently stands, that voter must still give notice to the chief electoral officer of their intention to vote. They must also apply for a special vote. What the amendment does is that that voter going forward does not need to give notice of their intention to vote in a segment against which they are registered. Secondly, they do not need to apply for a special vote. We apply a dreaming provision in that a voter who is registered against a specific segment of the international voter's roll and who intends to vote at the voting station serviced by that segment of the voter's roll, that voter does not need to give a notice of their intention to vote. They'll be deemed that they will vote at that voting station. The only instances where a person must give notice of their intention to vote is if a person registered against the voting segment in South Africa House in London intends to vote in Stockholm on voting day. In that case, the person needs to give a notice of their intention to vote because they are voting outside the segment in which they are registered. To summarize this point, a voter will no longer be required to give notice of their intention to vote against the segment against which they are intended. They are registered. Secondly, we are looking at extending the period within which people must give notice from 15 days, and to that end, we're removing the 15 days as provided for in the law and placing that period in the election timetables, and with the intention to make that notice period longer than 15 days. Clauses 14 and 21 account for the majority of the submissions that were made, and these are the more substantive clauses. At the heart of the submissions are the following. The first is that the IEC seeks to usurp the power to determine an electoral system to itself. Secondly, that the Electoral Commission is intent on introducing a voting method that does not provide details, and therefore it is a departure from the prescribed method in Section 38 of the Electoral Act and Section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act. Having considered the submissions by members of the public, and also having heard the inputs of members of the Portfolio Committee, we are proposing a rephrasing of those provisions. But before we get to the rephrasing, let me at the outset indicate that the proposed amendments in clauses 14 and 21 do not prescribe an electoral system. They instead relate to the mechanics of voting at a voting station. We also accept that the determination of an electoral system is something outside the province of the Electoral Commission. It is reserved constitutionally for Parliament, and it is not our intention to take that power and give it to ourselves. The second point is that the Electoral Commission is acutely aware that the introduction of electronic voting is a national policy matter that requires the participation of the broader South African public, and that is a matter that must not be treated lightly and should thus be informed by proper research. So the amendments in this bill should be seen as a way to enhance and facilitate research by creating a statutory and lawful framework to enable controlled study or piloting of election technology to enrich the national policy debate. The amendments do not therefore authorize e-voting. And having, as I said, considered the submissions, we are proposing a rephrasing as follows. That Section 38 of the Electoral Act 1998 is hereby amended by the insertion after subsection 8 of the following subsection. 9, the Commission may, for purposes of piloting new technology, prescribe a different voting procedure in a selection of predetermined voting districts, provided that the voting procedure so prescribed must subject to the necessary changes required by the context conform generally with sections 38, 1, 2, to 5. This will be as it relates to the Electoral Act. We're also proposing a similar rephrasing in terms of section 47 in the context of the local government municipal electoral act. What this phrasing does is achieve two things. One, it limits the applicability to piloting, so it makes it clear that the amendment is only limited to piloting and we do not introduce a new voting method for the entire country. And that this is defined in predetermined voting districts, so it doesn't implicate the network, all networks of voting districts. Secondly, we also make it clear that in the amendment and in the rephrasing that the method that we wish to introduce cannot be different or cannot detract from the procedure laid out in section 38, 1 to 5 and section 47, 1 to 5 of both the Electoral Act and the Municipal Electoral Act. So in section 38 and section 47, we are proposing a rephrasing that makes it evident that we do not intend to introduce in a backhanded manner a new electoral system for the country. Secondly, that even that amendment that allows us to pilot will still be subject to the controls as set out in sections 38, 1 to 5 and sections 47, 1 to 5 of the Electoral Municipal Act and the Municipal Electoral Act. I now move to page 9 and deal with comments in clauses 14 and 21. These ones relate to those submissions that support amendments in a manner that almost like anticipate introduction of electronic voting. Because we are not authorizing electronic voting, we note the submissions made, and those are the submissions that we will take on board as and when we do the piloting for the Electoral Act. The submissions on page 10 as they relate to clauses 14 and 21, again, there are response still apply as with the necessary contextual changes, and the rephrasing also applies in this instance. The next submission, Chair, is on page 11, and this relates to clause 15. And this submission was from the Institute for Race Relations, Dear South Africa, and about 11,100 other interested members of the public. This relates to section 51 of the Electoral Act. And again, we must make it clear upfront that we are not intending to remove what the law requires of us to do in accounting for either the ballot papers or the ballot boxes that have been given or assigned to a voting station. What we are only doing here is to remove the requirements from the body of the Act and prescribe them as they are in the regulations. But in moving them to the regulations, it may also be necessary to relook at some of those provisions, because over time, we have introduced new things in the Act that have an impact on how we account for the ballot papers that are issued in the voting station. That also speaks to how we account for the result slip that we issue at that voting station. So the following point needs to be made, that a number of introductions have been made, in particular Section 38(8), Section 41, 1 capital A, Regulation 8 capital A, and Regulation 19(4) of the Elections Regulations. And these have the following impacts, that new categories of disputed votes have been introduced. So we need to look at the result slip and the ballot paper statement to rationalize it, to make it clear that what is referred to as disputed vote, what is not a disputed vote, because some of these disputed votes may end up as being counted, because there's now a new category of disputed votes that cannot be resolved at the station. They are reserved for the commission for adjudication. But in adjudicating those votes, it may end up that those votes are accounted for on the result slip once the commission has made a determination. So we're looking at removing the form that we complete after the count from the Act, but regulate it in the regulations in such a manner that we can simplify it without limiting the information that is necessary for people to make a judgment call on the freeness or otherwise of the voting process at that voting station. The next submission is on page 13. And this submissions are from 70s Group and Dear South Africa and 308 other people who are largely pro the bill, but they are also raising matters that are not in the bill. For example, a submission is made to ask why the bill does not allow for direct election of mayors and independents, and supposedly the authority, according to the 70s Group, would be the Constitutional Court order judgment in the New Nation Movement that was handed down in June this year. And here I think we need to make it clear, firstly, that the judgment of the Constitutional Court in the New Nation Movement matter handed down in June 2020 does not implicate the Municipal Electoral Act. We all know that the judgment related to the ability of individuals to stand for elected office other than through the platform of political parties. And that judgment has no implication whatsoever for the local government Municipal Electoral Act. Secondly, the point that needs to be made is that the election of mayors and office bearers in municipal councils is not regulated in terms of any of the electoral legislation. Instead, it is regulated in terms of the Local Government Municipal Structures Act. The last point that we're making in terms of those submissions is that the matters that are being raised are outside the remit of the Electoral Commission. They are national policy matters, and in any case, they are not the subject of that bill. So in this area, we are making no adjustment to the bill because the matters raised do not arise from the wording in the bill. Similarly, on page 14, Chair, there are submissions from Mr. M.G. Buthelezi, and our view is that the submission covers matters that are outside the province of matters assigned to the Electoral Commission, but also those matters are not relevant for purposes of this bill. The last substantive submission, Chair, is in clause 8, and these were received from the Amabungani Center for Investigative Journalism. At the heart of the submission by the center are that if the bill is approved as it is, in other words, if the bill authorizes the CEO to redact certain information on the voter's roll, it will make scrutiny of the voter's roll difficult, and it will make the work of journalists difficult. Our submission is as follows, that the amendments that we are making in Section 16 are intended to bring the Electoral Act in line with the requirements of the BOPI Act as it relates to the processing of personal information, and also as it relates to the personal information of persons that we place in the public domain. And the point of departure is that the Electoral Commission is bound by BOPI. The Electoral Commission is constrained by BOPI from unnecessarily placing the personal information of persons in the public domain. And hence the new introduction of reduction of information on the voter's roll. There we need to make a distinction as follows, that by redacting information, it is different from saying you are de-identifying the voter. We will provide the voter's roll with the full names of the voter, with the address where an address exists. What we will redact are certain numbers in the identity document of the voter. That way, we do not de-identify the voter. The voter can still be identified, and if you needed that information to raise an objection against the inclusion of a voter on a certain segment of the voter's roll, you have enough information to exercise your other rights in terms of any other law. But we are also preserving some personal information of the voter so that we don't provide the totality or the 13 digits ID number of the voter. So the amendment is not intended to de-identify the voter. So political contestants, journalists, and any interested person will still be able to link the entry of the voter and the identity of the person. But by redacting the identity number, we are preserving the personal information that we place in the public domain. The inspection voter's roll will have all those details to enable the access by any persons of the right that we have. And in conclusion, we conclude that journalists may access the voter's roll for information through other means. For example, they can make a PAIA application, in terms of which they currently receive information from the voter's roll. In conclusion, Chair, there are three broad areas that are covered by the submissions. The substantive ones relates to Section 14, relates to clauses 14 and 21, and those relates to Section 38 of the Electoral Act and Section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act. In that regard, we have offered to rephrase those provisions to make it clear that we do not intend to usurp the role of Parliament to the Electoral Commission to determine a voting method and to determine an electoral system. The submission by Amabungani, which relates to Section 16, in that regard, we are saying that we are not limiting access to the voter's roll, but we are bringing the voter's roll in line with the requirements of BOPI Act as it relates to the safeguard of the personal information of voters. Lastly, Chair, the removal of Section 23.3. We do not want to hide. We do not want to limit the right of the Minister of Finance to have oversight over the budget of the Electoral Commission. To the contrary, we're demonstrating that is a redundant provision that has been overtaken by event. It was correct when the when before the PFMA was passed into law. With the passage of the PFMA, that provision has been rendered redundant because the Minister of Finance approves the budget of the Electoral Commission for the three-year period, and on an annual basis, the Electoral Commission reports to Parliament via the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs on what it has expended against the budget that has been approved. We so submit the responses of the Electoral Commission. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Shiguri. And through you, Chairperson. Honorable Bongo, that's the sum total submission that the Commission has considered. And before I conclude, Chairperson, may I indicate that due to a prior commitment to attend the memorial service of the late AG Mankwetu, I may not be in a position to conclude the presentations by 1 o'clock. I would have to leave. However, the Vice Chairperson and my fellow commissioners are available together with the CEO and the team. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chairperson.